Good morning. Shane, are
Hi,
you there?
This is Shane.
I don't
here.
Know what happened. Something's going on with the blog talk. I couldn't get logged in. So we'll just give me a minute. I'll have a clean break, and then we can just go ahead and start with the interview, and I can put the beginning, the intro in, and then the outro afterwards. Okay?
Whatever you think is best, obviously.
Okay.
I'm standing
by. I've just
been
kind of going through a lot. My mother was in the hospital with pneumonia. And
that's what you said. Oh, man, I'm so sorry. That's terrible.
Yeah, she's 90 years old, and let me tell you, it ain't
oh,
no joke.
Oh, God bless her.
Yes.
God bless
yes.
her.
Okay.
That's awesome.
All right, so here, give me a minute here, and let me find my notes. So we are going to talk about you being an author. We're going to talk about your recovery from a stroke, you being a former high-tech sales professional, and then your writing and your brainstorming and how you write your books and all that kind of stuff, okay?
Sure. Okay.
All right. So countdown, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney, brains. You know you're back at the spot, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Are you ready for a thriller? We have the amazing Shane Etter. He is an author, a former high-tech sales professional who suffered a debilitating stroke. But after that, he found his gift of writing. He's going to talk to us about his 8 published novels and just all the wonderful things that he's doing, being an advocate, living down there in Georgia. Without further ado, brains, help us welcome our guest today, Mr. Shane Etter. How are you, Shane?
Thank you, April. I am thrilled to be here with a bunch of brains that are better than mine, obviously.
No,
thank you very much.
Or you're the greater brain because you've been able to forge ahead. So tell us a little bit about you, Shane.
Well, gosh, I was, as you mentioned, a high-tech sales professional for my adult career, most of my adult career. On the side, I was a black belt in karate, and at 50 years old, I was at the gym working out and had a near fatal stroke. A guy who I barely knew told the owner behind the desk, and they called an ambulance, and 30 minutes later I was in the hospital for 15 days, 4 days in intensive care. And I still have side effects from that, left leg weakness that causes me to have a limp, and it's been 16 years since that, but yeah, it was life-altering, needless to say, but not life-ending. And I never intended to be an inspiration. I was just trying to survive, but I hope I can be an inspiration to others who have had not only strokes, but any type of life-altering, I don't know what to call it, but medical problem that has caused them to question themselves or doubt themselves. And I hope I can be an inspiration for them that life doesn't have to be over. Maybe it changes, but you can certainly keep going and hopefully make it better.
Well, you're more than an inspiration. You know, you're a shining light because you didn't give up. You didn't give in. And so many people do that, you know, it's easier said than done. So through all of that,
yeah, it is.
Through all of that, you were able to find a gift. You know, when you got lemons, you make lemonade. Tell us how you experienced writing, and how did that come into play?
Well, we have all heard, you know, what they say, and we all know who they are, and I'm using air quotes. I'm trying to be clever, but we have all heard that reading is the best thing you can do to improve your brain. Well, I figured if reading was that good for you, writing might creating new words that didn't exist on a page before you wrote them yourself would have to be even better for you than reading. So I decided to start writing a story in my head for a number of years, but I wasn't a writer. I couldn't write it. It was just an idea I thought of. And so I started writing that story, And a funny thing happened. A dozen pages into it, I knew it was good enough to be published. I was a voracious reader, still am. As Stephen King says, he got a PhD in writing by reading. And so I read constantly to improve my writing. But so 12 pages into it, I knew it was good enough to be published. I'm not saying it was the best thing I'd ever read, far from it. But it was far from being the worst thing I'd ever read either. It was somewhere in the middle, which meant that it was good enough to be published. And it was bought by a publisher. The sequel and the third in that series, all by the same publisher. I'm now on my second publisher with my most recent books. You said I actually have seven published novels. My eighth will be out soon, and I have started my ninth. But I started writing just to improve my brain and then found out that it wasn't too bad. So now I have seven published novels.
That is incredible. That is incredible.
Well, thank you.
Where do you find your inspiration to write these thrillers?
In every single thing around me. I think a writer has to be an observer of life. And I can't write in a vacuum. I write at my favorite coffee shop. I write on an iPad Pro with an Apple keyboard.
You told me that. Wow.
It's only because it weighs a pound and a half, and I can carry it with me wherever I go and wherever inspiration strikes. And I need to have all five of my senses involved to write. I need to see things going on around me, hear things, touch things, smell and taste things if possible. So I write at my favorite coffee bar in the mornings. I write at my favorite wine purveyor in the evenings, and I mostly edit at home, but new things, new words, new pages, I write where I'm out somewhere where I can see life occurring around me.
What is the process of putting together a thriller? Do you see the end before you write the beginning? You know, I'm a poet, so it's a different process, a different thought process in compiling my thoughts.
That's a great question. Usually I start with an idea that I can express in a sentence. I know what the story is going to be about, and I can tell it in one sentence. And I usually have the beginning before I ever put pen to paper. Well, that's a colloquial term. Before I sit down to my iPad, I usually have the the beginning figured out. And pretty quickly, the end comes to me, and I just have to connect the 250 to 300, 350 pages in between. Nothing to it, you know. I'm trying to be funny again. I need to quit doing that. But I think it was Hemingway who said, writing is easy. All you do is sit down at a typewriter and bleed. And I think he was completely wrong about that. I say all you do is sit down at an iPad and bleed. So there's nothing to it.
You know, I always wonder, too, how do authors figure out the names of their characters and the scene?
Boy.
You know, is this in, you know, Denmark, or is this in Georgia, or where the scene is set? How do you come up with that?
Great questions, April. I know when I first started writing, coming up with, let's call them cool names, was a challenge for me. And I started doing some research, and it appears that it's a challenge for all writers. So what I started doing is, when I'm out and around and in the course of a day and I have my iPad with me, if I meet someone new that has a cool name, I immediately enter in a list of names I have. And it may just be a first name, or it may be their last name that struck a chord with me. And then whenever I start writing, or I need a new character, if I'm currently writing a book and I need a new character, I'll go to my list of names, and I might even put one first name with another last name. Or if they are a tertiary or a minuscule character and only need a first name, I'll just pull out a first name and use it. But that was a great question, because apparently all authors struggle with coming up with good names. And as far as settings, well, I love New York City. I've been to New York probably over 100 times back when I was in high-tech sales. So it was easy to decide that I wanted to write novel set in New York City, and I'm in North Georgia, and Lake Lanier, the largest man-made lake in the eastern half of the United States, was the setting for my first book, Bottom Dwellers, about green mutant creatures living on the bottom of Lake Lanier. So that was pretty easy to come to, and it's a pretty standard joke around here. Whenever anybody asks me what my first book was, and I say Bottom Dwellers, and I say it's about green mutant creatures on the bottom of Lake Lanier, they go, is it fiction or nonfiction? Because Lake Lanier has a lot of spooky stories, which is good for me.
Yeah, it was when I was writing, I just did some short stories myself. How I found names was, it was the oddest thing someone had told me. I used the first name, and then I used the street name. So I have a book now.
Oh,
I lived on a street called Hallcourt. So the character in my book is called April Hallcourt. And it was, it made it a little bit easier because you see all these street names, and they're really, really cool. So that really kind of helped me out
that
a lot.
That's a great
and when
idea.
It came, and then when it came to locations, it was places that I was familiar with. If I had, when I was in Spain or when I was in China, because I could really recant and I could look at those street names and really create a paradox and a paradigm and a scene that others could experience because they maybe had shared in those same places. So that is really great. But writing a thriller, murder and mystery and whodunit and how they got caught and all of that, that is so exciting to me. That is really exciting to me. What do your friends say, when you have them do a gentle read for you? Are they excited and enthusiastic?
I don't have friends write for me. I do. I am a member of I guess it's a critique group. I'd rather not call it that because that sounds like it might be mean-spirited, and it's not. Several writers, there's 8 to 10 of us various weeks that we read from our work in progress to each other, and they give us feedback. And that was last night, my most recent one. We meet every Thursday night for 8 weeks. Then we take 8 weeks off, and then we come back and meet every Thursday night for 8 weeks. So anyway, we're through last night was the sixth session of an 8-week session, and I just got good feedback. And so that's what I've been working on today is making edits that they all suggested. And my mentor is the leader of this group, and he's Jedwin Smith is a 2-time Pulitzer nominee, and he's the leader of our group. And I get their feedback from the week before and from last night and start editing. But, people are always positive. Most people that don't know you are usually more supportive than the people closest to you is what I have found. And I think I have heard that has always been the truth. But
when people come up with challenges and obstacles, that just makes you better. And then it's like giving birth. I don't think you've ever given birth, but it's like a woman giving birth. You put that baby out to the world, and people are, they're going to critique it. The baby's got the biggest dimples, or look at that curly red hair, or whatever. But once you put it out there to them, it belongs to the world. It's no longer just your baby.
That is a great correlation. I never thought of it that way, but you're right. You can't take it back. I told somebody that this morning in my coffee shop that, once it's out there, you can't take it back. It's out there for the world to see, and everybody can be a critic. It's an old saying I've heard, those who can do, those who can't criticize, but nevertheless.
Exactly. And then it just makes you better and it makes you stronger because you're creating these novels to be sold to the world. And you want everyone to enjoy it. So you have to have different perspectives and different insights. Give us some suggestions.
And especially from people
book.
I respect. I'm sorry.
Right.
Especially from people I respect, like my mentor and the other people in my class, I take their criticism when they are being critical. If they tell me this doesn't work and this is why, but they offer another way to do it, then absolutely I respect their opinions, and most of the time I'm going to do something to change it, like they say, because I do
and
respect
I know this
their
is a lot of fun
feedback.
Because when you look back and you say, wow, I wrote this. Can you give authors some suggestions on selling their books? Now, and the reason why I say that is I know that you have publishers. I self-publish. I've sold over 12,000 copies of my books out of the back of my car. Okay, the hustle is
my
real.
My goodness.
But
that,
you know,
is great.
You've got a lot of authors, especially that come on my show, and they've got thousands of books in their garage, staring there, looking at them instead of them being put out to the world.
Yeah,
so I give suggestions as, like, you know, at your favorite coffee shop, host a reading, go to the library, host a reading, start a book club.
All of that. I did my book launch from my most recent novel, Devil's Sympathy, about a 60-year-old writing professor at Oxford University in England who's been killing people for 40 years with a sword concealed in his walking stick. I launched that book at my coffee shop, and they took a picture of me and put it on their television that's on a loop above the coffee bar. And when I walked in there this morning, the first thing I saw was me in an almost life-size widescreen picture. And I'm going, that's just so weird. But I have had, and I've had other people go, is that you when we're standing in line at the coffee bar? I go, guilty. Yeah, but yeah, do readings at coffee shops. They will, a lot of them will let you. Do go to libraries. I reached out to a local library, easy for me to say, earlier this week that is having a Sunday program through the spring and summer with authors reading from their books, and I reached out to them this week and sent them a copy of my book. So, yes, those are things you have to do at this point in my career. Anyway, that's things I have to do.
And you know what people don't do, Shane? They don't encourage people to purchase their books. I hear so many authors, oh, well, I just give it away. Well, good for you.
No.
You know, you have to print the book. You have to pay for editing, all of these things. And I feel that if people make an investment and they purchase your book, they have a buy-in. So many times people get free books, they don't read them. You want them to read them. Not only do you want them to read them, but you want them to go into Amazon or whatever other resource that they're using and write a review, write a critique, good, bad, or indifferent. So then other people will be inspired. Other people will have a snippet. They will have an objective opinion about your writing. I mean, you never know who that person could be. It could be a great person that's looking for a screenplay or looking for a theatrical play. Right?
Yeah. I'm fortunate that I am in Georgia where more movies are made now in Georgia than anywhere in the United States. And it's a good place to be when you have visions of having a film made out of your novels, and you never know who you will run into in greater Atlanta or someone who knows someone who can do something with a book into movie. So, yeah, you've got to constantly be promoting.
You do, and you have to be careful, too, because of copyright. A lot of people don't understand what copywriting is and what proprietary property is. So you got to hold that close to your vest. You got to get an ISBN number, and you know it's got to be recorded in the Copyright Office in Congress. So that way it protects you, because there's a lot of great ideas out there, but they're also sparked by something else, and you don't want somebody just to take your bone and run with it, right?
Well, that's for sure. In fact, I have heard, I can't remember, some famous, he's probably dead now, famous old author said that every book that's ever going to be written has already been written. So all you can do is put your spin on it, you know, do it in a different manner, put it in a different place, a different setting, but every book that's ever been written that's ever going to be written has already been written is what I read. And when you think about that, yeah, there are only so many ideas out there. So you don't want to make it easy for someone else. At least.
Exactly. Replication is the greatest form of flattery, but then too, there's plagiarism, and that's just straight out thievery. We don't want to do that. But if there was a person that was a thief, you know how to handle it because you're a former black belt. Tell us about your experience with the martial arts. That's such a discipline and a skill.
Well, I'm glad you said martial arts, because somebody asked me a while back in an interview like this, said, Do you consider the fact that I was a black belt in karate until I had a stroke anyway. I mean, now walking is not the easiest thing in the world for me, so kicking is certainly hard, but difficult. But he said, did being a black belt in karate, does that help you with your writing? And I said, well, I think it does. Think about it. All fighting arts like that, well, I used the word that I didn't want to use, art, martial art.
Right.
Karate, judo, kung fu, they're all arts. And we don't have anything, we don't have, like, karate is the national, it's like the national pastime for people to do in Japan and Okinawa. And we don't have one like that. I mean, sure, kids play baseball, but, you know, it's not, it's their national art is what it is. And it is an art, and writing is an art, music's an art, karate is an art. And I think being creative in the martial arts for a lot of years, I do definitely think it played a part in my ability to write, which, again, came after a stroke, and that was God's way of helping me to recover from my stroke. So I have to give God all the credit.
You do, and, you know, like I said, it is a martial art, but it is also a mental discipline. It's not just the physical combative contact that you have.
Oh, yeah.
You're taught to meditate. You're taught to honor. You're taught to respect. You're taught to be aware
no doubt.
Of your surroundings. You're taught actually to be less combative, you know, to really not be so physically aggressive because you know that you have that skill.
Fact.
And like you say, kicking might
That's
be a challenge, but I would hate for somebody to be face-to-face with you and try to snatch your wallet. I bet you got one great judo chop right across the right across the throat of them, probably knock them out.
I think I could keep them from doing that, yes, but thank you. You are a funny woman.
Well, yeah, I think that you're wonderful, and I think that you are an amazing man. And Brains, I have an exciting opportunity for you. Go in, listen to this, leave a comment about what you think about the ability to write, about the ability to be able to recover, to forge ahead, mental discipline, writing on an iPad. Leave us a comment and be entered to win one of Shane's novels. I'm so excited. I'm jealous. I picked one for myself so I can sit here and read and just enjoy, you know, all of the talent, but also respect and honor the man behind the book, the
right.
man inside of these pages.
You're so
because
kind.
It's not just about the story. It's about the story of his life and how he did not give up and how he's being able to be creative and use his mind muscle and maybe not his leg muscle. Thank you so much for being here on the edge with me, Shane. Will you come back and tell us when your next novel, the eighth novel, is released, and if there is a book that, I mean, a play or a movie that comes out, will you share that with us here on the edge as well?
Thank you, April. I would be delighted to anytime. And thank you, Brains, for being out there and being so welcoming to me as well.
Now, how do they get a copy of your book, or they follow you on social media?
Amazon.com. My books are on Amazon.com, of course. But, yes, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, I'm on all. Shane Etter, E-T-T-E-R. And Shane is just like the old cowboy movie, black and white cowboy movie back in the day. So, Shane Etter. And I would love to hear from any of the Brains and get an online friendship with those people. Started.
Well, thank you so much, and we will be definitely promoting your books and have all my Brains so excited about, you know, watching and listening and maybe even learning some great things from you. You're an amazing man, Shane, and I'm so glad to have you here with us on the edge.
You're so kind, and I am so thrilled to have been here. I hope you all have a great weekend. Happy Friday.
All right. Brains, do all that you can do. Pick up a pen and pad. If you do nothing but journal, write your story, share your story. Words have meaning and words have power. Thank you so much for being here on The Edge, and we will talk to you again soon.